This is In Focus, the weekly public affairs program from KTBB and the Team Sports Radio, featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place.
Good morning. Good to have you with us here on In Focus. I'm Roger Gray, and joining us, a return visit, actually, from Tim Butler, Chief Development Officer over at the East Texas Food Bank. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure.
Good to have you here. Let's see, where do we start? Talk about the food bank, I guess the numbers. The counties you guys serve, which is a whole big chunk of East Texas, how big is the problem that we're looking at in terms of hunger, food insecurity, et cetera?
Yeah, that's a big one. This is a two-hour show, right?
So we can get into exactly, yeah.
So just talking about some of the issues that East Texans have to deal with, it's relatively unique, not only for Texas, but for the nation. We are a rural food bank. You know, everyone that anyone that lives in East Texas knows how rural it can get out there. I know we live in Tyler.
Sure.
But so it feels like the big city. But if you get out to Rusk or Dangerfield or Jefferson, like you are in, there is not a lot going on, not a lot of resources. And I think that lends itself to things like food insecurity or poor health. You know, this is kind of, I'm already rabbit trailing on you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's all right. That's all right.
We have the second highest population of veterans in the state, and we don't really even have an active military base anywhere near us.
Did not realize that.
And guess what? We have the least amount of resources for them.
Wow.
So
okay.
We talk about access to resources. That's kind of the theme of what the East Texas Food Bank does.
Mm-hmm.
We have whole counties where there's no big box store, where the only place where people go buy groceries is Family Dollar,
right.
Dollar Tree, that kind of thing, which is fine if you're trying to, you know, just live.
Yeah.
But if you want fresh produce or you want healthy food, like that's not something that's readily available there.
It's like getting your groceries at Stop and Go.
Exactly. You know? So you go to the convenience store. I don't know if you've ever bought a gallon of milk at a gas station. It's like $10. Like they're so expensive.
Yeah.
It's hyperbole, but it's higher than retail is the point. So people are basically paying a surplus because of the lack of resources.
Right.
So when you think about the population that we serve 26 counties in Northeast Texas. So that goes all the way up to Texarkana in the north, all the way down to Lufkin in the south. We go west to about Maybank, Wills Point region, east to Louisiana. It's 20,000 square miles. It's the size of West Virginia.
Wow.
Texas is huge. Right? And we're one of 20 food banks, by the way, in Texas. That's a being Texas food bank. But with our specific service area, this lack of resources, the lack of pediatricians. We have whole counties without pediatricians, whole counties without big box stores.
Well, it's like the phrase food deserts or the phrase health deserts, for example, for lack of hospitals, et cetera.
Absolutely. So, yeah, you know exactly where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
We have a vulnerable population on many fronts. So what the East Texas Food Bank is trying to do is distribute not only as much food as we can to the more than 200,000 food insecure individuals, more than 200,000. There's almost a quarter of a million people in East Texas that are food insecure. That's one in five adults. One in four kids. We're not only trying to, and I don't know, did you ever visit a pantry back in like, or just to visit it or volunteer back in the 90s? Do you remember that at all?
Yeah.
So my family volunteered a lot too. And like, it was just a lot of food that people would donate out of the back of their closet. You know, like, oh, well, this is an old thing of sliced potatoes or this is an old thing of hamburger helper. So like the food that you get at a pantry back then was not necessarily great for you.
Yeah.
It obviously serves an important purpose.
It was whatever would stay on the shelf forever.
Yeah. Exactly. So, when I've talked to doctors since then, they've said, I don't refer my food insecure patients to pantries because they get junk.
Yeah.
Like it's perpetuating the problem that they're coming to the doctor in the first place, if they're diabetic or pre-diabetic. Yeah. By some
instant mashed potatoes and so forth. Yeah.
High caloric. It'll get you the energy. It'll get you full, but it's bad for you. So food banking has changed dramatically since then.
Okay.
50% of the food that we distribute is fresh produce.
Okay.
So last year it was 18 million pounds of fresh produce, which is just incredible. It's hard to even comprehend what that means. It's basically a full truckload of produce every day.
Wow.
Leaving Tyler and going out to our service area. So my point, We're trying to serve these folks, our neighbors, mm-hmm. get them the food that they need to survive, but we also want to get them the food that they need to thrive.
So it's not just the instant potatoes. It's not the can of Campbell's soup, et cetera.
Exactly, yeah. So,
well, which is fine. I mean, I like Campbell's soup.
Yeah, and none of us
can't live on it.
Healthy either. Yeah. So like, it's fine. Like, we're not forcing people to live a lifestyle that they're not comfortable with.
Right.
But like, if you go to a food pantry now, our mm-hmm. Tyler Resource Center here in town, 60% of the food that people leave with is fresh produce. And
very
it's
good.
Great. And then we have healthy items. We have brown rice if they want that. Mm-hmm. We have lean meats. We have 2% milk, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And people just love it. It's unbelievable. They keep coming back for the fresh produce, too. Mm-hmm. So that's, I really think we're instigating true change.
Yeah.
Not only feeding people. Mm-hmm. That's our mission. People come and declare a need for food, like, we're going to feed you.
Right.
But we also want to shorten that line at the food pantry in the future. And we really think the promotion of healthy food mm-hmm. is how we're going to do it. You know, if you think about if you're a person that lives on a budget.
Yeah.
If you just had a kid, they get diagnosed as pre-diabetic or diabetic. What's that doing to your budget? Now you have to think about insulin. Now you have to think about healthcare for the rest of this kid's life.
Right.
Like, that's just taking away from something like your food budget, mm-hmm. which is easily negotiable.
Yep.
You can't not pay your electric bill, but you can choose not to buy expensive, healthy food.
Right, right.
So that's
easily. And sadly, the unhealthy stuff is quite often cheaper.
Yeah, the mass production piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it's a lot easier to produce a 12-ounce can of beef ravioli.
Yeah.
You know, we have whole guys that dedicate their lives to growing sweet potatoes, you know. So it's easy to get the cheap stuff. So another piece that we do there mm-hmm. is not everyone's comfortable or knows what to do with the fresh produce that we distribute. So mm-hmm. we pair that with nutrition education.
Okay.
We actually have people that go out to food pantries and say, hey, I know you don't know what these garbanzo beans are or really what to do with them, but here's a... I made this hummus for you to try.
Uh-huh.
What? Just like you go to Sam's Club, you know, you surf the samples at Sam's
Club. Sure, sure.
Yeah. So like, here, try this hummus. Or like, here's another thing that you can do.
Oh, okay.
Instead of buying cookie or making cookies for your kids.
Hummus with pita chips is just, it's like the perfect snack.
Love it. Underrated.
Yeah. Yes.
So, but another thing with garbanzo beans is like, hey, if you put some chili powder on this and put it in your oven, like mm-hmm. you just make corn nuts. And what kids don't love corn nuts?
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like healthy versions of what we do every day and just educating people. So that's really a big part of what we do.
Yeah. You gave out some numbers. Let me say, first of all, you said, you know, what percentage is now fresh meat and produce?
50% of what we distribute is fresh produce.
80%.
50%. It's about 18 million pounds of produce.
Was that last year? Can you do that this year? Mm-hmm. That's part of the problem. A lot of things have changed.
Yeah, man, fantastic question. This is what you do this for a living, huh? So, yeah, it's tough. So in February, we got news that we lost $2 million in funding that was specifically for fresh produce.
Uh-huh.
So that's big. The food bank.
And it didn't just affect you. It affected farmers. Because a lot of that farm-to-fork stuff was food banks, SNAP benefits, et cetera.
You know, it's hard for me to think about this because it's local farmers. It's not just like Del Monte didn't get their money. You know what I mean?
Well,
it's like I had, I'm not going to say any names or even say a region, but I had a farmer call me that had already planted his crops and expecting this money.
Counting on,
And it's not. So just imagine mm-hmm. that. I mean, we love our farmers. I think the nation truly does love our farmers.
Well,
it's such an important part of what this nation was built on, being able to supply our own agriculture.
Otherwise, we're all eating canned ravioli. Yeah.
I think everyone truly believes that. Like, farmers are the backbone of this country.
Sure.
We're in trouble if anything goes wrong. But, like, this poor guy, mm-hmm. like, he's going to take a loss this year.
Yeah.
And it's because that's gone.
I heard an interview the other day, a couple of Kansas farmers. China was their market. That's it. They don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to get a government handout. They're going to have to refinance with the bank. I mean, a lot of them are in trouble right now.
The soybeans, I think, is what you're referring to, right?
Is that what I said? Soybeans. Yeah,
but I think
it was soy.
I just, like, I'm empathetic towards the whole situation. I feel so bad for the farmers.
Well, they built a business around a market.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, just with an expectation, too.
Yeah.
But, like, in our So the way it's impacting the food bank is we don't have access to that funding for produce anymore. We're not over reliant on government funding. And I think that's probably wise. Like anytime there's a new administration, things change. So if we're like, we're going to go out of business if we lose this produce money, that's not the case. But who it's going to affect is our neighbors that love that fresh produce and need that healthy food, like we just went over. So what we're doing this year, you know, we're committed to healthy food. We're not going to bail on produce just because we don't have this funding available to us. So we increased our produce budget by $300,000 this year compared to last year.
Okay.
And we're going to distribute 15% less. So it's just, we're still committed to it.
I mean, what are you going to do?
We have to do it. And I'm lucky to be part of an organization that cares that much about health. You know?
So you're increasing the budget for that. Where does that come from?
So we heavily rely on private donations, especially when you lose federal funding like this.
You guys and NPR both.
I just came from a banquet of another nonprofit that was asking the same thing. And it's great. There's so many great nonprofits, guys. You can't go wrong, especially here in town. But, you know, East Texas is incredibly generous. They've been supporting the food bank for almost 40 years now. I don't know if you know the story about how we came to be, but
now, tell it.
We were the kind of redistribution center for the North Texas Food Bank in Dallas. So you could imagine the Dallas Food Bank serving all of East Texas.
You were like a satellite.
It's just too much for them to consider, and not to mention they didn't have the East Texas roots. So a big group of folks in town said, you know what, it's time for us to have our own. So we're talking like Bruce Brookshire, Isidore Ruth, just like the guys that helped build this town said, we're going to build the East Texas Food Bank. And we came to be 1988, 1992. We became standalone, started serving, I think it was 15 counties, and we've expanded to 26 since then. So, but my point is that Tyler and the surrounding communities have supported the East Texas Food Bank for almost 40 years. And it was a real vision of the people that live here that is a testament to that vision that we even exist.
I was on your website today, and there is, for folks that haven't been there, your interactive map. I found incredibly cool. I was looking at places where I used to live and work to see what kind of shape they're in. You know, places in other states where I've worked. And it is very revealing. The number of people who live above, for example, the SNAP income limits and those that live below. The number of Texas counties, including where you find some pretty big cities that have a majority of folks living below that that income limit will surprise you.
I mean, we have whole counties where 25% of the people that live there are food insecure, and there's worse. We're the third
worse.
We're the third highest food insecure region in Texas. So it's pretty rough. And I think it kind of goes back to the amount of resources that we have and how far people travel for jobs, et cetera. You know, food insecurity is no joke. What you're referring to about the SNAP stuff is if you qualify for SNAP, that's a helpful resource for you to go to the grocery store and get food. But if you make $5 too much, then you don't have access to that resource anymore. And then that's really when you depend on a food pantry.
The information that is in that interactive map, that may become difficult to come by. Because it was just announced the other day that the hunger report, the food insecurity report in this country that comes out this year will be the last. They're not going to do it anymore. To save money, I guess.
I'm not really definitely above my pay grade to say why it happened. But I'm here to tell you how it'll impact us, I guess. So the food insecurity report that is operated or created by the United States Department of Agriculture got canceled. I'm sure a lot of folks saw that. Really what that does for food banks is it informs our decision making. So if I'm talking to people that are hungry right now, that means we know where there are pockets of hunger, where this mobile distribution needs to go, where this new food pantry needs to be. That that incredibly important report informed that. So that's where do these people live? If you're a donor, I think you want to know that a nonprofit is making strategic decisions. So we utilize that food insecurity report to make sure that we're doing the right thing. So we have other resources too, but obviously you can't have too much data to help support what you're doing. You know, our mission is to fight hunger and feed hope, and having less data to do so is, it's not great.
Well, it's not just you guys. It's not just nonprofits. It's government entities, cities, state governments. They have decisions to make. A lot of the programs come out of Austin.
Yeah.
And not having good information doesn't seem to make much sense. Let me give you the phrase. They're saying it is, this is out of CNN, saying it had, quote, become redundant, costly, and politicized. And that, quote, extraneous studies do nothing more than fear-monger.
Okay.
So they're, I presume they were worried that all this information will be fodder for those that object to the budget cuts and so forth, I guess.
Could be. Yeah, I mean, like I was said when we were talking about farmers, is it's a bipartisan issue. Supporting farmers is a bipartisan issue. I feel like feeding people is a bipartisan issue, too. Like, you know, I've spoken to Nathaniel Moran about this all the time, just next door.
Yeah.
It's like, he cares about the food bank. He was a huge supporter of us during COVID. He got the National Guard out here to help do distributions out at Old Harvey Hall. So, like, we have Republican leaders that care about food insecurity. We have Democrat leaders that care about food insecurity. Why this was done, I think just maybe us being vocal about what this is doing to the emergency food resources like food banks is really the probably the best thing that we can do, is let them know how it's impacting us.
Yeah. But you're going to have to make your plans to some extent in the dark.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You lost some data. And it's going to be a little bit of a challenge. However, I will say this. There's a little bit of a bright spot for the East Texas Food Bank specifically. So we're one of the few food banks in the nation that actually have it's called a online database for all of our food pantries. And what we've been doing since 2011 is capturing food insecurity data for East Texas, where folks live, how far they're driving to a pantry, how often they're coming. So we have a lot of great internal data for the last 14 years. It's not going to last forever. It certainly would be nice to have a little bit of support on the national level. But for now, I think we've got a kind of a good foundation to make sure we're still serving people in a proper way.
Okay. Well, you guys will get by. We'll see how everybody else does. But that's the situation for now. We also know, obviously, about the budget cuts, and you've talked about that. How are your donations going? Are people stepping up to make up the difference?
Yeah.
Because I've talked to other nonprofits, and they have told me this part of the state is particularly generous.
Yeah, that's not a lie at all, and it's not just pumping people up. It really is unique. During, let's talk a little bit more about COVID. I know everyone loves talking about that, but so food banks really...
Memories,
yes, you know, let's focus on that right now. Food banks really got a lot of wonderful new donors and donations during COVID, and just like record high fundraising. What happened when COVID went away, and this makes sense, is people started going back to their normal philanthropy and didn't necessarily involve food banks as much. So you've seen a lot of food banks across the nation where the revenue kind of dipped back down to pre-COVID levels. We haven't necessarily seen as much of a regression there. And it's 100% due to East Texas being a generous community. I truly believe that. The East Texas Food Bank has been able to maximize the amount of food that we're distributing while keeping revenue and donations up enough to serve at a high level since COVID, which is just, man, what a blessing, you know? It's just...
Well, and it says something about this area. Obviously, it does. I did not realize, before I started, took over doing this show, I knew about the major nonprofits, you guys, United Way and Goodwill and all the others. I didn't realize how many organizations there were helping people in every aspect of life, but how much money this area gives to them. It isn't just you guys. It isn't just United Way. It's everybody. It's quite an area.
Yeah, Salvation Army, Goodwill, PATH,
Together Family
Assistance, like the Mentoring Alliance, Bethesda.
I was blanking.
Yeah. I got you.
You filled it in. I appreciate it.
It's just, and it's not only to the... Here, I'm going to give you a few dollars just so you can keep the doors open. They're funding us at a level where we can actually instigate true change with the people that we serve. And it's just, that's fantastic. That being said, you know, I talked about the produce budgets or SNAP cuts and that kind of thing. You know, food insecurity went up this year in Northeast Texas. There are more people hungry now than last year.
And any idea why? Any idea what's going on? The economy? What?
Yeah, armchair economist here. I mean, it's probably inflation. I gotta imagine that's probably the mm-hmm. biggest reason.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you know, go to the grocery store. You're spending. Let's just guess here. You're spending $15 to $20 more when you go to the grocery store. Yeah. That's a big deal.
Oh, sure.
People are living on the edge of a budget.
Right.
You're spending 20 extra bucks. Well, now mm-hmm. I can't fill up my gas tank, or now I can't get new tires in a month, or now I can't mm-hmm. pay the registration of my car. I don't know. I'm only focusing on auto stuff.
But yeah, well, things. No, I understand. Yeah. You know, because that's expensive stuff.
Can't
yeah.
replace my water heater. You know? So yeah. I think, like, even that
maybe
little
bit. Maybe I can change the oil myself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think there's always a need for donors to continue to give mm-hmm. that produce funding alone. If we want to maintain that high level of service and get healthy food to people. And I know people are passionate about getting the right food
sure.
to folks. We rely on donors.
And they're there.
And they're there. So yeah. Thank you. If you guys are listening and you're a donor of the East Texas Food Bank, thank you so much. Yeah. Like, I hope you're in touch with the mission and the positive change that you're bringing to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can I?
Well, let's talk about the programs you guys have.
Okay.
Obviously, the food bank. Obviously, you can. How often can you come in? Are there qualification requirements? How does it work?
Oh, yeah. Good question. Yeah. I haven't talked about this in a while.
Yeah.
So our food pantry distributions are based on income. So folks have to make a certain amount or less to
participate. So this is not one of those just drive up deal and we'll hand you a box.
Yeah, you got it. We do have a couple of those we'll talk about in a second.
Okay.
But just a food pantry, when you think about PATH, when you think about mm-hmm. St. Vincent de Paul, that's how it works, is
okay.
it's income-based. So if you make, I don't want to get too inside baseball, but it's based yeah. on the federal poverty line.
Right, right. And it's a percentage above that.
You got yeah. it. 185% is the
okay.
percent. So when they come, different pantries have different rules about mm-hmm. how often that you can come. So we have a pantry attached to the food bank here in Tyler. It's called the Tyler Resource Center. People can come twice
okay.
a month.
All right.
So some pantries you can come once a month. Some pantries you can come every week. So I think the immediate assumption, mm-hmm. and I thought this before I worked at the food bank too, is like, well, people are just going, they're going to PATH, and then they're going to Tyler Resource
yeah.
Center, and then they're going to St. Vincent.
They're loading up, yeah.
And they're going to every single pantry in town. So this cool thing.
So they have a nice full, you know,
yeah,
larder.
Yeah. They put it all in their deep freeze yeah. and they live off of it. That actually isn't true. And the way that we, and it's not just me saying it,
mm-hmm.
we have this database that we talked about.
Yeah.
Every person that comes to a pantry in East Texas as a partner of ours is logged into this database. So I know mm-hmm. exactly when they're coming, how often they're coming for every pantry.
Okay.
So when a person comes to a food pantry in East Texas, they're only visiting any food pantry 6 to 7 times a year.
Whoa.
So they might come to the Tyler Resource Center once, PATH uh-huh. once, Tyler Family Assistance once, but they're only coming when they need it. It's not even once a month when they're going to any food pantry.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
So most people are pretty responsible about it.
Absolutely. And yeah. there are outliers. I mean, we serve people that are homeless. Like, you need
sure.
you need more meals than the people that are just looking to yeah. the seniors that just need.
I'm a little short this month, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And that's mostly what we see. So if people are only using a mm-hmm. food pantry 6 to 7 times, and they really just need the supplemental food.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Do you qualify online? How do you do it?
You do it when you come into a pantry. Mm-hmm. There's an intake process.
Yeah.
So the majority of them are done on the computer.
Okay.
The way that we do it at the Tyler Resource Center is someone comes in and provides the information. It's how many people are in your household, what's the gross monthly income for your household,
mm-hmm.
and your address. We can only serve people whose residence is in Texas.
Okay.
So once they provide that at the Tyler Resource Center, they only have to do that once a year, so they yeah. don't have to provide that. Kind of potentially embarrassing.
Sure,
or
sure.
at least private. We could.
Nobody wants to admit they need help. Let's be
right.
honest.
Yeah. yeah. And that's kind of why we try to break down as many barriers as possible.
Right.
They come in and then they get like a
this
little.
This is tough enough. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's not make it harder. But they have a little scan code. So if they come mm-hmm. back in a couple months, they would just scan the code and we have all their information already.
Okay.
So it's very convenient.
All right.
We do have another program. You talked about this a little bit. It's a drive-through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's meant to serve a different population. It's people that may not be comfortable coming into a food pantry, maybe people that don't live near one. That's
mm-hmm.
probably a big one, and that's you referred to the food desert earlier.
Sure.
So we have 140 food pantry partners,
mm-hmm.
which is a ton, and they're all wonderful organizations, but they're not everywhere.
Okay.
You know, we have some areas where the closest pantry isn't in 20, 25 miles.
Okay.
So that's a long way to drive. if you don't have a reliable transportation or any transportation. So we take trucks and do produce distributions. They're called mobile pantries or produce drops. Mm-hmm. And so people that come through don't have to provide that information at all. It's just come get produce.
I have to tell you, I live in a small town, an unfortunate distance away from here. And people are always asking, when's the next food drop?
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Awesome.
So that's little bitty town. Matter of fact, I checked the county it's in, and above or below poverty level, they are waiting for the food drop.
Yeah. I mean, and when you get further and further from the big hubs like Tyler or Lufkin or Longview, so like San Augustine.
Or Dallas and Houston.
It gets worse and worse, and that's about the lack of resources. Mm-hmm. We do have wonderful partners in every single 26, one of our 26 counties. We have food pantry partners in Jacksonville and Crockett and Marshall and Mount Pleasant. They're everywhere.
Okay.
But they're, again, if you don't have reliable transportation, you can't necessarily get there.
Yeah.
So that's why we do mobile pantries. To eliminate that barrier.
And those are literally the drive-by.
Yeah, you got it. So you remember during, here we go again, COVID. Yeah. Remember all the overhead pictures of like the thousands of cars that are going through?
Right.
It's kind of like that on a much smaller scale now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Looking at your programs, child hunger, I know, one in four Texas children is hungry right now.
Yeah.
That should startle all of us.
That's a devastating one, right?
Yeah.
You know, the biggest hunger relief program in the nation for kids is national school lunch. So we all know about free or reduced lunch, free or reduced breakfast. You know, we have whole elementary schools in East Texas where 100% of the kids qualify for national school lunch.
And that may be the best meal they get all day.
Yeah, and it actually is not bad. We could never replace those meals. Mm. It's billions of meals across the nation, right? So what we try to do, we have programs that kind of fit around the National School Lunch Program. Mm-hmm. When do these kids that rely on National School Lunch need additional food? When do they not have access to that?
Yeah.
So it's weekends.
Summer.
You got
it's
it. Summer's
summer.
A big one. We'll jump to summer.
Yeah.
So we have a summer feeding program where we serve 90,000 meals across our service area.
Okay.
We partner with organizations like Mentoring Alliance or like the Tyler Parks and Rec across our 26 counties. Yeah. So we'll distribute lunch and breakfast to these kiddos so they can be at a park. Their mom brings them up there during the week, Monday through Friday, and they'll have meals. We actually tested something new this year where we did weekend to-go meals. So when the kids come up on Friday, they can get a few meals for the weekend to help supplement until the next week.
Cool.
Another meal gap is what we call for the kids is weekends, of course. So we have the backpack program, which everyone's probably heard of.
Okay.
So that's a really great one, specifically for elementary kids. But counselors, nurses, teachers will identify children that are showing signs of food insecurity. So my wife's actually a teacher here in town.
Okay.
So she's talking to me a little bit about how she finds these kids.
Wow.
And it's kiddos that are absent a lot on Mondays. These poor kids, like they might have had a meal or two during the weekend. Now they got to get on the school bus and get to school and be ready to learn. Like the excessive absences on Mondays are a big food insecurity sign.
Okay.
Kids falling asleep in class. Disciplinary problems. Do you ever get hangry? Because I do.
Yeah,
when I'm hungry, I'm not great. And those poor 7-year-old kids are not going to behave any better than I would.
Yeah.
So it's when these teachers identify these things, we help equip them with the ability to identify food insecurity.
And by the way, we've only had a minute or two left. Senior hunger obviously is an area too. You guys,
this is probably the most vulnerable population, truly.
Yeah.
So you have seniors that have a very fixed income, Social Security only, and live in a generational home where they don't have a mortgage, so they can't necessarily move because then they're going to have to pay a mortgage, right?
Yeah.
Haven't weatherized their home, roof has fallen in, poor transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get food in the hands of these folks? And we have something really cool called a senior box program.
Cool.
And these seniors can get this 35-pound box once a month, and this is truly supplemental too.
Mm-hmm.
It is income-based, just like the pantry.
Yeah.
You have to make a little bit less. But, you know, if you're on Social Security, there's a gap in the checks.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be a week where I don't have any food. I'm waiting on this Social Security check.
Yeah.
So there might be a meal gap of 3 or 4 days where they don't have access to any food.
Mm-hmm.
And this is saving their lives. It works really in tandem with Meals on Wheels.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah, they do the weekday
the delivery,
meals,
yeah.
the hot meals, and then they can have this during the weekend. So it's great.
Okay. If people want to get involved, you need volunteers. We're down to the end here. Obviously, could give you a call. Yeah.
Yeah, easttexasfoodbank.org.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say our two biggest needs right now, volunteering.
Okay.
We love it. We can hold up to groups of 50. which is really cool. Mm-hmm. You can come volunteer as a group, put together those senior boxes that I was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Or if
you, somebody has to do that, yeah.
That's right. You don't think about that part. Or if you donate, we actually have superior buying power. If we can buy a can of green beans for 20 cents or less, right?
Yeah.
Every dollar that you provide us, we can provide 5 meals. Instead of going to the grocery store and buying food and donating to the food bank, if you give us donations, we can buy a lot more food.
We're out of time, unfortunately. Tim Butler, thank you so much. You guys do great work over there, and it's gotten even harder.
Yeah,
so,
thank you. Really appreciate you.
Thank you.
In Focus is a weekly public affairs program featuring members of the local community working to make East Texas a better place. In Focus is produced by KTBB and the Team Sports Radio. And we thank you for listening. Join us again next week.